This is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Allen County Right to Life, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Amanda Banks, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Amanda Banks.
And I'm Scott Kump. Choose Life News and Views is a joint project of Allen County Right to Life, Indiana Right to Life, and Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
The hard cases. That phrase can roll glibly off our tongues as we're trying to get legislation passed, especially pro-life legislation. The hard cases. We know those cases to be rape, incest, and the life of the mother. And you know, it's a lot easier to accept these exceptions until you look in the face of a dear friend conceived as the result of a violent rape. Or talk to the woman who was an incest victim and chose life for her child, unable to imagine life without that child. And I am so pleased today that we're going to hear the story of a very hard case. The story of the life of the mother being in danger during a pregnancy. This is Kathy Humbarger, and joining us by telephone for this broadcast of I Choose Life News and Views is Heidi Floyd. Heidi lives in Warsaw, Indiana, and we're so glad, Heidi, that you joined us today. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You have an absolutely incredible story, and I know you've gone all over the country telling it, and I'm just so excited to have you share it with our listeners, because I know that there's someone who is going to hear your words, and they're going to be encouraged in ways that we can't even imagine. That's our prayer for this program today. But let's start about 8 or 9 years ago in your life. As I understand it, you were living a fairly ordinary life, if there is such a thing. You were the wife of a Lutheran pastor, your mother, and you had a career. You were a very busy lady, like many of us are. Tell us a bit about your family and your ordinary life.
Sure. It all changed in what seems to be, in retrospect, the blink of an eye. But, of course, God has a map of our lives. And so to him, he just chuckles, I think, when we see things like, what, are you kidding? I
can't. Yeah.
We were, my husband and I had three beautiful daughters, and we lived in Glen Allen, Illinois, a western suburb of Chicago. He was not actually a pastor at the time. We were both computer programmers doing kind of the 9-to-5, you know, working, living a great life in a wonderful, safe, beautiful suburb. The children were happy. We had a dog, little picket fence. I mean, you could not have asked for anything better. In my mind, things were exactly as they should be. And then my husband and I both worked for the dot-com industry, which is, of course, at that time, gosh, 10 years ago, was on its way up and then went right down, and he actually was laid off. Not just him, but his entire department. And
wow.
It was going that way. You know, companies would just lay off enormous amounts of people at a time because the business was going away. People were able to do what we were doing at home, so it wasn't as necessary. So when he approached me to tell me that he had been laid off, I was terrified, but he had peace, absolute peace. Like,
wow.
I met him at the table. We met at a coffee shop, and he said, "It's okay. I lost my job this morning." And I said, "Well, how is that okay?" And he said, "As you know, I've always wanted to be a pastor." He really felt very strongly called to do mission work. But, you know, with a wife with three children living in Chicago,
sure,
not a lot of mission work happening there. But he said, I think God is directing me to become a pastor." And so I've contacted a seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and so we're going to be moving there. Are we really? And I actually said to him, you know, I talked to God every morning, and he didn't mention
this was
Fort
the
Wayne
plan.
Never came up in the conversation
right.
between me and God. But he was so nonplussed by what had happened. I mean, we could have very easily lost the house, everything. But he said, you know, absolutely, we're going. And even though we have no way to handle it, you have to leave your job. We're going to sell the house, and you're going to move. We did. Packed up, move out to Fort Wayne so he could start the seminary.
And about how long was that from the time that you learned this news from your husband until you found yourself in Fort Wayne?
It took close to a year to sell the house. So he went through his first year at the seminary alone, driving back and forth on the weekends, and we to him, which is a lot more difficult when you have three very little children. It's hard to kind of tote them over to see dad. It was easier for dad to come.
Exactly, especially in the wintertime across northern
right.
Indiana.
Yeah, and that kind of plays into the scenario as well, because so we moved out to Fort Wayne, finally sold the house, got a really small house right across the street from the seminary. I landed a job very quickly, which was nice because it was a big concern. You know, now I was the sole support of a family of five. So we were there for another year. And then it was at the end of that second year that he said, so there's this thing called Vicarage.
Yeah, right. We'll be moving again.
Right. With the kids. And we had been under the impression that in certain circumstances, if you have a large family, something like that, you could stay and do a vicarage close to Fort Wayne. But apparently that year that didn't come into play for us. So we had to move back out, and this time toward the southern end of Illinois. And we were there in this little tiny town, and I'll never forget the first dinner we had with the pastor and his wife. He said, you know, listen, son, my job is to be your mentor and kind of walk you through this vicarage, this internship of yours, mm-hmm. to guide you through so you can see the everyday life of a pastor. What happens when you're, you know, called upon to do this and how a church runs, things like that. He said, but I have to tell you, my wife was just diagnosed with breast cancer. So you're kind of on your own because we're in a full panic state.
Oh, my.
You know, a good, godly man, but naturally his life had been shaken up. Now, for me, that all kind of came full circle. My mom was 42 when she died from breast cancer, struggled for years, and it was during a time when chemotherapy was a death sentence, frankly.
Right.
It was just absolutely brutal on her, and yet she went through that experience with more grace and love of Christ than I've seen in any other human being in my life.
You know, I can really identify with you, Heidi. I lost a sister at age 59 as a result of breast cancer, and I can attest to the fact that the Lord gives special grace, I believe, to his children when they're going through something like this. Her experience lasted, I think, about 3 years. So I can understand, although it had to be particularly devastating to you because it was your mom. And if she was that young, you weren't very old either.
Yeah, I was 20. But what she kept emphasizing to me during her whole journey, and I mean, even at the end when she was unable to move, you know, in hospice care, she was able to witness to people by not even moving a muscle on her body, just by talking. And she said, it's not about me and what I'm going through. It's how people are looking at me going through this. And she said, it doesn't matter what shape your body is in. You're still a vessel for Christ. You have to be a representative to him, whether you have all of your arms, all of your legs, whether you can move them or not. You have been given the opportunity to show people love and compassion, not judgment and cruelty, love and compassion. And that's what you have to do. And she said, so it's not what I'm going through. It's that I can show others that you can go through something like this and still maintain your faith, she said, because that's all I have.
Wow.
That's all I have left. And so even in her dying day, she was a perfect example of what I should be. Now, for me, in this particular situation, kind of fast-forwarding again to my husband on his vicarage, I gave this pastor's wife what I knew she would need as a gift, even though, of course, she had no idea. I gave her a bag full of things like unscented lotion and chapstick because your skin gets so dry going through chemotherapy, and a nice, like, shawl because you also get cold, bottles of water, and, like, funny reading material.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's crucial. When you're sitting in a chair like that, you don't want the typical, and so you have breast cancer books.
Right.
Horrible. You know, or the waiting rooms with, you know, Mechanics Illustrated from 1942.
Yeah, that's right.
Just something fun. So, like, I bought her, like, Home and Garden and House Beautiful, things that could take her mind off of what she was going through, and handed it to her. And she looked at it, and she said, oh, thank you. I told you I had cancer, and you gave me socks. And
you'll need them.
It's like a euphemism for life. God gives us this bag of stuff that we don't even know what we're supposed to do with them,
right,
until we realize we needed that.
Right.
And she said that a month later. She said, everything you've given me, I've used.
Wow.
You know, everyone else gave me plants, and you gave me socks, and yet I've worn those socks every time I get chemo because I didn't know I'd get so cold.
Exactly. So did you get through that year of vicarage before you received your two medical diagnoses at almost the same time? Or
actually not. I didn't even make it through the first month.
Oh, my gosh.
We were there, and it was, there were only two of the last times I remember saying to God, really, could it get any worse? I was standing in the basement of the vicarage home, not quite as large as I had been implied to believe it was, after it had flooded for the second time.
Oh, no.
And so all of my, everything was trashed, and I remember standing in the basement with rubber boots saying, really, really, Lord, could it get any worse? And then I found out within one week of each other that I was pregnant, and not that that's a bad thing. That was actually a celebration. But then I found a lump changing my youngest daughter's crib sheet. I found a lump on my breast. I thought I had snagged a button on my shirt, and I looked down and realized I was wearing a T-shirt, so there was no button. It had actually snagged on a lump that was so hard, I felt it.
That had to take you right back to your mom.
Oh, every day. I mean, since she's been gone, she's been with me every day. Mm-hmm. You know, I think about her every day, but it was an immediate, oh, my gosh. And she pounded it into our heads. You must get your mammograms. You must do self-exams. Mm-hmm. And I did, but when you're nursing and pregnant for several years in a row, your body changes, and I don't mean in a really good way. I mean,
I know.
You know, this is awful. So I didn't think anything of it, and it grew so fast. You know, I swear it wasn't there the last month when I did my self-exam. Now, we were back in Illinois, even though, albeit farther south than we were, so I was close enough that I drove all the way back up to my OBGYN from what I had my other children. And she said, you know, with your family history, because it wasn't just my mom, it was my grandma, my aunt, there were so many women that have been lost through breast cancer. She said, I don't like it. Let's do a needle biopsy. And that's simply, for your listeners that don't know, they insert a needle into the lump or tumor and extract part of it to determine whether or not it's cancerous. And it's not just one needle. They go in three or four times. So the needle biopsy results come back just fine. No issues. It is just a calcium deposit, nothing to worry about. Go back home to, I'm working remotely now from this company that I had started working for in Fort Wayne and driving back and forth to see the OBGYN because I'm pregnant. And it was about a month later that she said, you know, this thing is growing. I can feel it, that it's growing from when you had your biopsy. I'm not comfortable with it. Let's go in and do a lumpectomy. Mm-hmm. And that's the surgery where they don't remove the entire breast. They just remove the lump, the tumor, what have you. And since I was pregnant, when I went in for that lumpectomy, I was not fully
sedated,
anesthetized. Mm-hmm. I was awake, so they had given me a local anesthetic on my breast. And I'll never forget when the surgeon made his incision, since I was awake, I heard him say, oh, my God. That's what he said. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying desperately to peek over that little blue screen they put up. You know, is there like an alien hand coming out of there? Why are you saying that? So the nurse had the presence of mind and wherewithal to say, let me explain to you what's going on. She said, we can see from the track marks where you had your biopsy. And indeed, that lump doesn't look like much. What we couldn't see from your mammograms or your MRIs, we could not tell that you have something called nested tumors. There's a group of them underneath that main tumor.
Oh, my.
And they have fingers, all of them. Now, at one point during the surgery, these tumors were so big, there were so many of them and they were so big, they had only anesthetized me for the top tumor, the size of the top tumor. And at one point in my surgery, I screamed in pain and I said, I know that sounds crazy, but I feel like I'm on fire. And the nurse said, no, we're cauterizing you. We were afraid that due to the size of these tumors, we hadn't given you enough anesthesia or had gone far enough to the left. So they kind of shut everything down, re-anesthetized, and then took as much as they could. They ended up not having clean margins, closed me back up and kind of sent me home. And I was at my sitting at my desk doing work when I got the phone call just a day later that said, you know, we've got the results in and you indeed have cancer.
Oh, my goodness.
What do I do now? Now I'm panicking. And I'll never forget, I went in to see my OBGYN, and of course she had women, older women in her patient load that had breast cancer. And of course she had very young women who were pregnant. She'd never had one that was the same. Mm-hmm. She never had someone that had both. And she was crying behind her desk, and I went over behind her and I said, it'll be all right. We'll be okay. Come on, hang in there.
Well, that had to be God working through you and giving you the strength for the moment. This is Kathy Humbarger in the studio, and we're delighted to have Heidi Floyd with us by way of telephone telling us her remarkable story. Heidi, you had to be an emotional wreck, even though you were comforting your doctor. How was your husband handling all this?
Well, at this point, we were fine. We had not yet seen our first oncologist, so we weren't fine. We were in a panic state, but it was one of those situations where I assumed that since I was driving up to the Chicagoland area, I was in the finest of care. There mm-hmm. was no one better, no better medical facilities at my disposal, I had assumed. Now, the very first time I go to see my first oncologist, I go in with my file, all my information, and the oncologist tells me, we'd heard about your case. We've been in touch with your OBGYN. And we as a team, the group of oncologists, have decided that this is the easiest way to proceed. It'll be the safest. And she handed me a pamphlet that said terminating your pregnancy.
Oh, my.
Now, you and I have discussed the fact that I have many children, but I, in my mind, I thought I should have had many more. I actually have had two miscarriages in my life. So having three daughters and two miscarriages, children are an absolute blessing to me. I don't see them as being a nuisance or a hassle, or and I certainly don't see them as something that's disposable. And it was a crucial time in my life, and I've been asked so many times, you know, did you feel a presence or was it a struggle? No, I felt no presence, but I also didn't feel a struggle. In my mind, this was a clear dictate. All my life, as I've read the Bible, there's a consistent theme that says, be kind and don't be selfish, period. Wow. And in my mind, by me choosing myself, there's nothing more selfish than saying, oh, hey, thanks, little kid, for coming along, but gosh, I'm busy right now, or this might hurt a lot, or it could be inconvenient for me, so you have to go away and I get to live my life. How... The type of person I am, I could not have lived a life knowing that I made someone else, I sacrificed someone else so that I could live.
Isn't it interesting, Heidi, how the Lord oftentimes prepares us, sometimes through our whole lives, for a specific moment in time? As you talk about what you read in the Bible your whole life and your encouraging words of your mother as through her struggle with cancer. You know, I don't know if I am over romanticizing this. I don't think so. I think it's a testimony to how God is there for us, and he sees down the road. He knows where we're going. It's no surprise to him, and he knows what we're going to need when we get there. So it would certainly appear to me from your story that this is a perfect example of, not that everything was easy or rosy or you always felt good about your circumstances, but you could rely on the fact that God was with you in this every moment. Don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's what I'm hearing from you.
No, absolutely. I don't know how people go through things like losing a pen at work and are able to make it without God. This was one of the things that were so big. It was so overwhelming. I had to give it to him. Under no strength of my own could I have made it through that journey. The baby and I ended up finding a doctor in Indianapolis who knew how to treat pregnant women.
And how far along were you in your pregnancy at that point?
I was not quite out of my first trimester.
Okay.
The doctor knew that the medicines that he had been working on with his research, he had made it so they would not cross the placental barrier, but he also knew that he wanted to give the baby as much time to cook, as he called it,
right,
as possible. So he waited until I was out of my first trimester, and then for the entire rest of my pregnancy, on Fridays, I had chemotherapy with the baby. And so we would go to Indianapolis, again, driving from our Vicarage house in Southern Illinois, go to Indianapolis for the chemo treatment, drive home, you know, sick as a dog all weekend, and then drive back up to Chicago, because every Monday is when the OBGYN had to do the ultrasound to make sure the baby was still okay.
Well, one blessing is that gas wasn't approaching $4 a gallon at the time.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's something that's worth mentioning. There are so many people who are faced with things like pregnancy during a medical crisis, and the finances do come into play. And that's a horrible thing to say. I have to think about whether or not I'll be able to afford this. But, you know, my husband and I have been, and I'm going to be completely honest, financially devastated by this disease, not by the fact that I kept my child with me, because the cost would have been exactly the same whether or not I had terminated the pregnancy or kept my son. There was not an additional cost. It's just the staggering cost of chemotherapy and radiation and all the medical care that has crushed us financially. However, through it all, I now delivered a safe, healthy, beautiful little boy named Noah. My husband named him Noah because he said he made it through the flood. And it wasn't easy. I'm certainly not here to say that it was a piece of cake. It was very hard, because there are certain things they can't give you when you're pregnant.
Sure.
You know, the anti-nausea stuff and the things to help your white blood cell count up. I couldn't have any of that, just straight chemo.
Wow.
But yeah. I always knew that I was fighting for more than me, and that helped me go forward. It wasn't, you know, the question has been asked, gosh, how did you make it through breast cancer treatment when you were pregnant? And I'm like, well, it's so much better when I know I'm fighting for something
exactly
bigger than myself.
Exactly. Well, now this has been 8 or 9 years ago, maybe even 10 now, when you were going through this. And that can be a huge amount of time as far as medical technology. Is the treatment that you went through, even though it was not all that common and there weren't that many OBGYNs that were familiar, is it becoming more common now?
Yes, absolutely. I have many friends who have had the exact same diagnosis, the same treatment, that, and I found them, and they're younger than I am. So they have gone through this in the past, in the very recent past. My doctor left Indianapolis and became the head of the American Society of Clinical Oncology. So
wow.
He was over all oncologists. And after his first session to teach all of these oncologists from around the world, news came out that it was okay to treat pregnant women while they had breast cancer.
Praise God.
So yes, he had to leave behind his practice, but think of the lives he's impacted.
Exactly.
Millions of potential lives around the world that would have been lost had he not said, stand up, people. You don't have to terminate those pregnancies. They can do it, and they'll be fine. And so, you know, I've transitioned away from working with computers, and now I am moved to just share my story, and I'm honored to do so with corporations and churches and anyone who wants to hear this story. I'm honored to tell it because I think it matters. As you said, there could be one person who mm-hmm. needs to hear it, and I'll not know that person. I'd like to share this story if I could. I was speaking to a group of surgeons quite a distance away from here, and there were probably 75 of them in a room, and they were all men. Mm. I gave my entire impassioned story, and at the end, I got like golf clapping, polite, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, I failed. You know, this is going to be miserable. I kind of went to the back of the room, and I pouted the whole rest of the night. Nothing, you know, I didn't make an impact. These people don't care. They're surgeons. They're not emotional. A year later, I got a call from a woman who said, I heard you speak at the surgeons' conventions, and I said, I don't mean to correct you, but that was all men, that entire room. There was not a woman. And she said, no, I was the one who was serving coffee. And when you started speaking, I hid behind a pillar so I could hear the entire speech. And she said, it moved me so, and I didn't know why at the time. She said, but my daughter has just been diagnosed, and she's pregnant, and she's scared. Could you please talk to her?
Oh, my goodness.
And that was God saying, this is it, Heidi.
Yes.
If there's one person,
mm-hmm.
it is not your job to know that one person. It is my job to put that one person there. All you do is you go and tell your story, and I'll take care of the rest. You stand where I tell you to stand and say what I tell you to say.
Right.
And that was his way of reassuring me that even though I see it as a worldly failure, you know, I didn't get a standing mm-hmm. ovation, and those men didn't come up and talk to me afterwards.
You were there for her.
I didn't need to. I was there for the woman who was serving coffee.
Well, you know, Heidi, someone gave me these words a number of years ago, and I think it kind of says in a different way what you're saying, and that is that the Lord expects us to get up, dress up, and show up and leave the rest to Him.
Yes.
And oftentimes, we don't know the lives we touch. Every once in a while, He lets us see behind the curtain. You got to see behind the pillar, and that is encouragement for us to go on. But our trust in an Almighty God comes from knowing that we can be obedient to do what He tells us to do and trust that He is working His purposes, and He doesn't have to tell us how He's using our difficulties or our testimony or our lives. But it certainly is nice when He lets us find out once in a while how he's used us.
I have been asked if along the way I'd be willing to write my story. And when I was asked to do so, unfortunately, I had found a new tumor.
Mm.
This was just a few years ago. This is just in 2011. And so I said, I'm not really ready to write my story yet, but I was asked if I would consider writing just a short devotional book, specifically aimed for women, but really one that they could pick up or put down or take on an airplane that they don't have to read as a sitting. And Concordia Publishing House kind of approached me about that. And I said, you know what, I would be honored to do so, even though I didn't think that I had the capacity. I said, order my steps, O Lord, and tell mm-hmm. me what you want me to write. And so I did. I actually worked with them and wrote a book called In a Word, and it's available at cph.org if anyone's interested. It's just simple little observations of life and how I wish I would have responded if I had been more steadfast in my mm-hmm. prayers, and sometimes how I did respond, and sometimes it's just interactions with my mom or with my children, things that I think speak to people, and I hope so anyway.
Well, Heidi, do you have a Facebook page or a website if somebody would like to get in touch with you?
Yes, please do. I'm Heidi Floyd, and I'm out there on Facebook. I'm also, for speaking requests, there's a Facebook page called Follow Heidi, and Twitter, for anybody out there who's a fan of Twitter. My husband is not. He's no purpose in it.
I'm a Twitter novice. I'm trying to learn, but
it's certainly fun. And that's Follow Heidi as well out on Twitter. All one word, no space in between.
Okay, great. Well, you touched on the fact that you had a reoccurring tumor. Would you feel comfortable telling us what your prognosis is at this point?
Well, I hope the future holds for me seeing my son graduate from medical school, but right now I take a daily small, low dose chemotherapy is what they call it. It's Femara, and it's just a blocker to keep my cancer happened to be fed by estrogen, and so it stops estrogen. And, of course, as you know, during pregnancy, estrogen kind of goes out of whack. So at the same time my cancer was being fed, so was my child. So now I'm just on this medicine, and I hope for the best. I had a complete mastectomy and reconstruction. And, again, that was something that I didn't, you know, I prayed, and I said, Lord, I thought I was doing what you wanted me to. I'm speaking. I'm trying to reach out to as many people as possible. Why would I have this again? And the answer came immediately in the form of a phone call, because someone had a wife who was diagnosed who was going to have a mastectomy, and he said, I don't know what to get for her. Mm. Now, previously, with a partial mastectomy, it's not the same surgery. There are new difficulties and new challenges that I was now able to share with him. A year ago, I wouldn't have been able to tell him, oh, gosh, here's what you need for a partial mastectomy, but I don't know about a full one. Now I can say, go buy this and this and this, and here's why. And it worked well. Yes, it was a cloud in my life, but I scraped the silver lining off and I kept moving.
Well, God bless you for that. I had a niece that had a double mastectomy and reconstructive surgery at age 40. So your words are an encouragement to me that I can give to her as well. What one thought would you like to leave with our listeners? Something that got you through some of the trials or something that you held on to. Encourage us.
I'll just give you words from my mom that she gleaned right from the Bible, and that's be the nicest person in the room. Yes, there are women who are going to come into your life who say things like, yes, I've had an abortion. Yes, I have. They have struggled mightily in ways you cannot wrap your head around. We have to be representatives of Christ, and we have to be compassionate and kind. Because I chose this path, and I say that with the word choose in quotes, I didn't. It was laid out for me ahead of time. I just heeded his words. I felt his embrace. And there are people who do not yet feel his embrace. It's our responsibility to be his embracing. We have to help each other. No matter what, if it means a kind word to a stranger, if it means, you know, knowing that this woman is going through this terrible struggle and she needs financial help, you know, give her a gift card. Do something nice for someone else every day, and you will change the path that the devil is trying to etch in. You will erase it completely.
Wise words. Thank you so much for being our guest today, Heidi Floyd, and sharing your remarkable story of courage and comfort and encouragement. And I'm certain that we'll have you back for the next chapter in the story that God is writing in your life. I just have one request, and that's that you give Noah a hug for me.
I'll do it every minute.
Okay. God bless, Heidi. We'll be back in touch.
God bless you. Thank you so much.
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. For more information on the link between abortion and breast cancer, go to abortionbreastcancer.com. Abortionbreastcancer.com.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to ichooselife.org, because without the right to life, no other rights matter.